From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. This is Idaho Matters. The Earth's changing climate, and we're talking things from hotter days to even more dangerous weather events, could be impacting our brains in ways that we are only just learning about. Clayton Page Aldern is a journalist who also holds a master's degree in neuroscience and public policy, and he's delving into this issue in his new book. It's called The Weight of Nature, How a Changing Climate Changes Our Brains. And he's joining us today to talk more about this. Clayton, nice to have you on the program.
Hey, Gemma. Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start by some of the research and reporting that you have done on climate change that got you to this point of really wanting to write a book about the impact, as I said, on the brain when it comes to climate.
Yeah. Well, I was working in a neuroscience lab, 10 years ago at this point, and thought that was my dream job. I had found myself surrounded by brilliant colleagues and pondering the mysteries of the brain. And then I realized in practice that basically meant, in my case, sitting in front of a computer screen in like a windowless office for the rest of my life. And that seems slightly less appealing than what I was hoping for. And so I decided to take this interest in the brain, right? Take my expertise and try to get it out of the lab and into the rest of the world. And, you know, for me, that meant going into journalism and thinking about the relationships between science and society. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things my editor at an environmental magazine asked me was, well, hey, you're a neuroscientist. Is there anything to be said about the relationships between climate change and the brain, right? Where's the, this is your brain on climate change series? And, you know, I was a little hesitant to go there at first because neuroscience research is so easily sensationalized, right? I mean, how many articles have you read that have the headline, this is your brain on X? And, you know, so I was a little worried basically that I would alienate all my former colleagues by pulling at what I didn't really think were real threads at the time, but this was my boss. And so I said, well, sure, I'll see if there's anything there. And I did start to pull at the threads. And 7 years later, this is the result of that initial investigation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that, because in your book, you really dive into really what you say are invisible stressors. And these are things like heat and atmospheric carbon dioxide, but what they're doing to neurological diseases. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you include in there even like cognitive impairments.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that's actually the easiest place to start in terms of getting an intuition for what I'm talking about, because we've all felt this, right? On hotter days, we're a little more aggressive, right? We're a little more ornery. We're quicker to the trigger. We're less focused, right? It's harder to solve problems in the heat. And we know this from personal experience, but we also know this from a lot of economic research, for example, right? Economists have looked at students taking the SAT and noticed that even when you compare someone to themselves at a different point in time. So this isn't a story of, you know, a person in New York City versus a person in Atlanta. This is a story of measuring different people at different points in their life, at different temperatures. You basically see people become less good at taking these kinds of standardized tests. And so this is the kind of research that suggests, well, gosh, there probably is some kind of behavioral effect, some kind of cognitive effect of something like rising temperatures. And so, you know, this book is an attempt to catalog these effects and also place them in the context of a changing climate, because we are seeing rising temperatures. We're seeing rising atmospheric carbon dioxide, a greater frequency of extreme weather events like hurricanes and wildfires. And, you know, those events are also cause for changes in our brains, right? And it's not just about the types of things that we experience when we experience those events, right? You may have heard, for example, that something like a hurricane can cause post-traumatic stress disorder. That's true. Unfortunately, it's also true that if you are an expecting mother and you experience something like a hurricane, the trauma of that event can effectively be transferred to your unborn child. And if you follow that child, as researchers have done in a couple cases, you know, over the first 10 years of their life, just having experienced something like a hurricane in the womb is cause mm-hmm. for an increased risk of anxiety, depression, ADHD, conduct disorder, with those symptoms presenting basically as early as preschool, you know? And so there's a lot of scary stuff here, I think. And one of the reasons, you know, I use that word scary is because I think we're only coming to understand this stuff right now, right? We mm-hmm. kind of have this constellation of evidence that says the environment influences us at the cellular level. It influences us at the level of the whole brain, right? The organism, this whole body, and it also influences the manners in which we relate to one another, right? The level of society. And so we're just starting to piece together this constellation, but we don't know what it's going to look like in 20 years or 50 years. And mm-hmm. and so that to me is cause for a little bit of urgency here.
So how then do you start to have these conversations, not just, I think, you know, public discourse, right? But public policy. I mean, how do we start that conversation? Or are those conversations starting to happen?
Well, they're not quite starting to happen, at least not the conversation that we're having. But when governments think about climate change and acting on climate change, you know, it's often placed in terms of some kind of cost benefit analysis. You know, climate right. action is expensive. Clean energy and the types of adaptations that societies might need to further, right? These are expensive technologies and expensive actions. And so the price needs to be justified, right? The benefits need to outweigh the costs for governments to be able to pursue them. And I think one of the really important ways that governments can be thinking about this neurological crisis is that currently we're not pricing it at all, right? We're not taking the brain effects of climate change mm-hmm. into account whatsoever. There's no government in the world that's doing that. But if it's true that a change in climate is acting on the productivity of workers, if it's true that a change in climate is cause for an increased risk of some of the neuropsychiatric conditions we discussed or some neurological deformations, right? Or neurodegenerative processes, right? If the climate is bearing on the risk of some really serious disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, that kind of stuff is really, really expensive as a society. And so I really think that one of the first steps in wrapping our collective heads around this problem is basically putting a price tag on it so we can understand the situation in which we've found ourselves. Because I think it's only that kind of context that is going to allow mm-hmm. us to respond societally in an appropriate manner.
So taking public policy outside of it, what about strategies for an individual, right? I mean, Is there a resilience? Is there something or some things that people can do to maybe try to alleviate some of the impacts of climate change on our brains? Is that even a possibility?
It is a possibility, and I'm so glad you asked that question because, you know, I don't want to leave people in the fetal position here, right?
Right,
we're talking
exactly.
about some so we're talking about some scary stuff, but it doesn't mean that you need to hide from the world. And in particular, it I think actually implies that we need to be engaging with the world in a manner that acknowledges the porousness of the boundary between nature and ourselves, right? We are enmeshed in our environments. And I think coming to terms with that fact is one of the first steps that we can take towards something like resilience. By way of example, right? There's a researcher in California who's looked at what it means for people to experience wildfires. And unfortunately, as in the case of hurricanes, if you experience a wildfire in close proximity, if it damages your home, for example, or you lose a loved one, the chance that you're going to experience post-traumatic stress disorder skyrockets. But then if you ask specifically, well, what is it that's changing within people's brains and in their behavior and in terms of their response to these traumatic events, you can basically determine that people in particular, in terms of their neurocognitive performance, they're almost becoming more distractible. They almost look as if they have something like ADHD, even though they don't, even though it's a slightly different brain process. It's the manner in which people can avoid distraction that appears to be compromised. And what do we know about avoiding distraction? Well, actually quite a bit, right? We know, for example, that practices of mindfulness really matter for that kind of task. So I think that something like mindfulness, which is often framed in these kind of new agey, highfalutin terms, it actually matters here. And there's a huge neuroscientific evidence base that says cultivating that kind of practice of awareness and presence and acceptance of one's position in the world, right? Noticing what's happening with inside ourselves, but then being able to move on from those events, that's the kind of practice that can cultivate resilience within ourselves.
Well, I want to thank you so much for this conversation. It is so important to be having, and just really appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure to discuss it with you too, Gemma. Thanks.
Well, we've been talking with Clayton Page Aldern, a journalist who also holds a master's degree in neuroscience and public policy, talking about his new book, which is out now. It is called The Weight of Nature, How a Changing Climate Changes Our Brains. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.